helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. In IT, if there was a problem, I would often perform what is known as a root cause analysis. The idea is pretty simple. When you see a problem, you look for what caused it. Every time you find something, you look for what caused it until, well, there are no more causes. In other words, you've found the root of the problem. There's a similar situation in medicine. Do you treat the symptom or the disease that causes the symptom? If all you do is treat the symptom, then the disease is never cured and the symptoms, they keep coming back. Just as Albert Einstein used to say, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, is the definition of insanity. So as we look at what our governments are doing, we should be asking ourselves, are these government actors the disease or merely a symptom of something much worse? Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. You know, I spend a lot of time talking about what government is doing and how it deals with the Constitution, but I kind of want to take some time today and do a bit of a root cause analysis. There's a, I forget who was saying that politics are downstream from culture. So is it the politics that are the problem, or are they merely a symptom of something much more serious? Now, there's been a lot of talk lately, especially after all the COVID lockdowns and everything, that about the difficulty many businesses, especially small businesses, are having finding employees, people willing to do a job for a paycheck. Now, according to a report from Fox Business, there's a couple of reasons why. Why are these companies having such a hard time? Well, the labor participation rate back in, I think it was November, was 62.1%, meaning that only less than two-thirds of the people who are able to work, in other words, they're of working age, they don't have any physical or other disabilities preventing them from work, only 62% are actually working. By the way, that number is lower than the previous month with just 63.4%, meaning the direction's going the wrong way. So if the symptom is we don't have enough workers, we can't find people to work, what's the problem? Well, it could be that we don't have enough workers. Why don't we have enough workers? Well, we don't have enough people, not everybody who is capable of working is actually willing to work. And this has become a serious problem, especially after the scamdemic. But why? Why are so many people unwilling to work? Well, according to a study from the Committee to Unleash Prosperity, there are 14 states in the union where a combination of unemployment benefits and subsidies for the Affordable Care Act for a family of four is roughly equivalent to $80,000 a year in wages and benefits. $80,000. Now, sure, things vary state to state, right? You've got the tax load and the cost of living. But think about that. $80,000 income for a family of four. That'll make ends meet in most of the country. And according to the report, that's the average. You know, 14 states are doling out that much. In Washington, Massachusetts, and New Jersey, those benefits could add up to a $100,000 a year salary. You're talking a six-figure salary for sitting on your butt doing nothing. And realize, the median household income in the state of Washington is $82,000 a year. And in New Jersey and Massachusetts, it's $89,000. Yet they could make as much as $100,000 in benefits, or the equivalent of a $100,000 salary, when you figure out all the benefits and taxes and whatnot. Not a bad deal. So let me ask you a question. If you could live a comfortable lifestyle, a median income lifestyle, and not have to work, wouldn't you? I know. I would. I'd spend my time doing other things, but why would I go get a job if I could make as much or more, well, eating Cheetos and playing video games? I mean, it's the perverse incentive, and I'm not saying this was the intended consequence, at least not for the vast majority of people that supported this. But think about it. That is the, we'll call it the unintended consequence. I say for the most people, because there are people that simply want everybody dependent on government. To a pair, you know, like Klaus Schwab says, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. Well, that's what, look at how many people are encouraging people to become dependent on government. How many programs, how much of your money has been spent, or your tax money, I should say, has been spent encouraging people to simply go on the government dole? Why are we surprised when people do it? But have we come to the root cause yet? I don't think so. I think there's a little more we have to look at. For example, the House of Representatives recently approved a measure that would, quote unquote, reaffirm the Food and Drug Administration's ability to block states from banning abortion bills. Well, supposedly. Because, again, the FDA doesn't legally exist. It is not exercising a power delegated to the United States. Therefore, the legislation that created it was repugnant to the Constitution, therefore void. Not my words. That's the Supreme Court said an act of Congress repugnant to the Constitution is void. But the very idea that the FDA has the ability to demand that states allow drugs that kill people. Well, that's what an abortion pill does, right? It kills a child growing in the womb. And the very idea that Congress thinks they have the authority to tell the FDA that a state must mandate that. These are not symptoms. The arrogance of Congress is a symptom. It's a symptom of a much more serious underlying problem. And it is only one of millions of these symptoms. Millions of examples of something more serious underneath that we're just not dealing with. The very idea that Congress can delegate to an agency, not only, you know, a power not delegated to the United States, is one thing. But look at what we're seeing here. We have the Congress saying the federal government gets to regulate your health care. I believe we have seen through both the Affordable Care Act, the scamdemic proposals, the abuse of the emergency use authorization, and all of that are simply examples of the federal government taking over healthcare. Now, people talked about, you know, socialized medicine back when we debated the Affordable Care Act. We have socialized medicine. The vast majority of medicine today is practiced based on the rules and standards set by federal bureaucrats. Think about it. Doctors and hospitals set their rates based on what Medicare will pay. Doctors fill out all sorts of forms in order to get Medicare reimbursements. They were ordered to go to certain electronic medical records in order to get this. Everything is coded based on what Medicare says. The federal government now turns around and says, oh, by the way, no, you're not allowed to. We've got a safe medicine. It's been used for decades. It's actually on the World Health Organization's essential medicines list. But we're going to tell you you can't use it to treat this disease, even though there's evidence that it works. And people complied because they believe the federal government is in charge of healthcare. It's hard. We had to go looking. My wife and I, we were looking for a new neurologist for her. Do you know how hard it was to find a doctor that actually practiced medicine rather than let the bureaucrats decide? And of course, what the government give, the government can take away. So you remember that omnibus spending bill that so many people were railing about? One little known thing in there It's expected that millions of U.S. citizens that currently get Medicaid insurance, they could lose coverage due to that bill. Now, the very idea that the federal government believes they have the legal authority to establish an insurance program for low-income people is another proof that we don't know what the Constitution says. But we simply turn that over to the federal government, and now, well, they get to decide who does and does not get insurance. And of course, now there's all sorts of rambling and brouhaha. Oh my God, these poor people are going to lose their insurance. Well, the only reason they got their insurance is because President Trump illegally declared a public health emergency. Look through the Constitution. There is no national emergency clause, no public health emergency clause. They just made it up out of thin air. And as part of that, they, Congress passed and Trump signed into law back in 2020, the Family First Coronavirus Response Act, which basically prevented states from removing people from Medicaid as long as this illegal public health emergency was in effect. So now here we are, almost 3 years later. Oh my God, we're gonna stop supporting people for the emergency. We can't let that happen. I fully expect to see in the news and Congress, oh my God, we've got to do something because all these people are losing their Medicaid that they didn't legally get in the first place. And it's become so convoluted and twisted because the American people now believe that our medicine in America is socialized. That the federal government gets to determine what drugs you can use, what insurance you can use to pick up the tab when someone is old or poor. And of course, now the quote-unquote illegal public health emergencies are being used for, well, all sorts of things. And again, not just in the U.S., although we tend to focus here. COVID has been the excuse to turn many countries into a surveillance state. I mean, sure, China has their COVID app, right, where if you want to get on a bus or go into a building, you have to show your app and have the green QR code, not the red QR code. They tried to do the same thing here in the U.S. Several states have tried it as well. New York, California. Using COVID as an example, as an excuse, will turn us into a surveillance state. Well, more into a surveillance state. And again, what are some of the consequences? We complain about the drug use, the availability of drugs, the availability of treatments, the vaccine mandates, the surveillance. Well, it all becomes because we allowed bureaucrats to act like dictators. It's the so-called public health experts, the officials, that turned what was a treatable disease into the scamdemic, into this nightmare. Again, we knew since early in 2020, masks don't work. Viruses are so small, they pass right through the mask. In fact, masks can make things worse because they could take your spittle and aerosolize it, make it easier to transfer in the air. We know that the tests were unreliable. They were also issued under an emergency use authorization. We knew that the vaccine was ineffective at stopping the transmission, but we bullied people into accepting it. We turned what was, again, a disease, right? A virus, pretty nasty bug that impacted almost exclusively the elderly and those with serious pre-existing conditions. And we turned that into a disease that impacted everyone. Not because they got the bug, but because their lives were destroyed because of this bug. And before we go looking at government, there's a reason they were able to get away with. That is not the root cause. The root cause of COVID escalating from a pretty nasty bug into a global disaster was not COVID. It was not the disease, it was not the fake vaccine, it wasn't even the egregious illegal policies public officials put in place at all levels in the United States. I'm not talking about overseas, they have different laws, different rules. In the United States, all of the governors that locked things down, the cities that shut things down, that said, you cannot go to work. We're going to take away your business. We're going to take away your livelihood. We're going to give you subsistence living. Maybe not even that. See, all of that happened not because those are the symptoms. The disease were people thinking, oh, well, the government said, I can't do this. The government said, don't go out. The government said, you can't try ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. The government said, the only solution is to take a jab, to be a medical guinea pig. And we sat back and accepted it. Now, I've got plenty more examples, but before I do have to take a break. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes you have a hard time falling asleep and you just hate being tired. Would you like to be able to fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed? Well, I've got something for you. Healthy Cells REM Sleep Supplement. It is the only supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep, and it comes in an easy-to-use, travel-ready gel pack. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off of REM Sleep and all of your first order of REM Sleep or any product from Healthy Cell. Just go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So give it a try. Go to HealthyCell.com, try the REM Sleep or any of their wonderful products. They've got great things for overall immunity, for keeping yourself awake. But make sure you use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
I can tell you, one of the greatest pathophysiologic drivers for tiredness and fatigue during the day is poor quality sleep at night. People always focus on how long they slept, but they never think about the quality. And to improve the quality, there's a terrific product. That's the Healthy Cell REM Sleep Supplement. And what I tell friends and family and patients is take it every night consistently. It comes in a convenient bioabsorbable gel pack. Take it right before you go to bed. Take the gel pack, brush your teeth, go to bed. Its effects are nearly instantaneous, and patients get a well-rested sleep continuously, day after day, week after week, month after month. And then that daytime tiredness and fatigue melts away when there's a greater restful sleep the night before. So give it a try. Go to HealthyCell.com and in the promotional code, type in Out Loud for 20% off your order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoin the Constitution Study. And today we're doing a root cause analysis. We're trying to find the root of so many of our problems, especially involving government. Now, in the first segment, I talked about some examples of the out-of-control government, from ridiculous COVID restrictions, illegal COVID restrictions, to the socialization of the medical system, and that was kind of a jumping-off part. That was an example. But when I realized, and I forget who was who said it, that politics is downstream from culture, I started looking deeper as to, well, why are these policies being put in place? What is the impetus for so many of those things? And I started casting a little wider net, and several articles kind of popped up as I was doing so. Now, follow along, because this may be a little, well, maybe not obvious. But the very first one has to do with, well, a couple of classic novels. I mean, if you're talking about English literature, now, you have to understand, I grew up in a family around books. My family's business was, when I was really young, auto racing books and magazines. As a teenager, they got into historical fiction and producing all these wonderful books. My family was a family of readers. But I didn't read much for pleasure. It wasn't that I had a problem with it, I just wasn't very good at it. So I never was really an English lit type person, but I'm familiar with some of the books. Now, you're saying, Paul, what does this have to do with our crazy out-of-control government? Well, the article talked about a couple of classic pieces of literature. The first one's Charge of the Light Brigade, written by Lord Tennyson. Well, there's a university in Lincolnshire that denounces Tennyson because of, you know, that, well, they said he supported imperialism and he had failings. And these things need to be acknowledged and regretted. Now, okay, there's a couple points that this kind of brought to my head, and that is, do we all have failings? If we're going to be honest, every human being has failings. Are we going to isolate a person's failings and use that to degrade the work that he did? In other words, does Mr. Tennyson's failings, let's assume the failings are real and not part of our current, you know, destructive culture. But if they are, does that make his work, his poem, Charge of the Light Brigade, does that make it not mean what it says? Does it disappear? Does it become invalid because it was written by an imperfect human being? Another example is one dealing with Ivanhoe, written by, I think it's Matthew Scott. And it was described as offensive because of the way it treated racial minorities. By the way, we've heard this a lot about Tom Sawyer and other 19th century works. And this is where my warped and twisted mind went. See, what we're seeing is a impossible standard being set up. Like I said, we're all flawed human beings. None of us is perfect. All of us have our failures. And if all it takes is someone to find that failure to basically disregard all of our work, then none of us mean anything. None of your work is worth anything. You could come up with the cure for cancer and people could complain because, well, listen, you have your failings. It's this idea of the, call it the woke culture, the cancel culture, this idea of we have to destroy the past. We have to get rid of, you know, there was this move to get rid of monuments and statues that involve Confederate people. Okay, the Confederacy had a lot of problems. No ifs, ands, or buts here. But if we refuse to learn from our past, aren't we doomed to repeat it, as Santayana said? And as was easily predicted, it went well beyond that. It went to works of people who, rather than were pro-slavery, works that were anti-slavery. There was a statue of Lincoln lifting a slave to his feet. He had freed him. He had broken the chains, and he was lifting him to his feet. But because he was still in the process of being lifted, people wanted it removed because it made the slave look bad. And it went on to, the idea of, well, Jefferson owned slaves and Washington owned slaves, so we had to get rid of any monuments to them. The statues were taken down. Schools were renamed. Now, again, yeah, Jefferson owned slaves. And Jefferson, by the way, had a history of, let's say, some unsavory relationships with some of his slaves. Washington owned slaves. But does that mean the work that they did to bring freedom to people didn't matter? You know, Jefferson said that we're all free. We're all endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Does that not exist anymore because he didn't live up to the perfect standard he was setting? And this is part of where, as I'm looking at the root cause analysis, I'm seeing, okay, part of the breakdown in government is the breakdown in our society because we are expecting others to be perfect. If you don't meet my standards, I get to cancel you. I get to make you not exist. I get to demean what you do, not because of what you're doing, but because of some previous action. As I said, someone could find a cure to cancer, and they can be dragged down by some stupid tweet they made when they were a teenager. This idealistic world doesn't exist. But it also points out our move towards a collective mindset. And not just a collective mindset, but the grouping of people into different groups. All right, it's a little redundant. I'm sorry. But the idea is you're not a person. You're not a man or a woman. You're not an individual anymore. Which race are you a part of? Which gender do you identify with? We group people into these entities as if that is the defining factor. It removes so much of the uniqueness of the American people. You know, I'm reminded of a story I was told by a rabbi. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, the Jews, the Israelites, were not allowed to cut the stones when they built an altar. They had to take the stones as they were and figure out a way to make them fit. And you compare that to the Tower of Babel, which were made with bricks. And again, bricks are man-made. Bricks are uniform. But bricks require mortar to hold them in place, whereas you can dry stack stones much higher than you could ever dry stack bricks, because it's those uniqueness, it's those imperfections, those things that are different and how they interconnect and interlock that gives it strength. And we are literally breaking those off. We're saying, no, you have to fit some agenda. You know, if you're a black person, you have to vote Democrat or you ain't black, at least according to our current president. If you are homosexual, you have to have a certain agenda. If you're white, you have to have a certain agenda. And we lose all of our uniqueness, especially when we start looking at people not as individuals, but as groups. Which leads us to focus not on the rights of the individual, but the rights of the group. This collectivism, this socialization, this idea of we must deal with everybody the same. We must deny all differences. We must, you know, men and women are not allowed to be different. Trust me, men and women are different. I'm very pleased by the fact that my wife is different than I am. Yes, sometimes I find it aggravating. But it's the fact that she's different that makes the two of us work so well together. But this incessant need to not only classify people into groups, but to judge everything by that group leads to some, I think, are ridiculous outcomes. For example, this article popped up. Apple is facing a class action lawsuit because a person claims that their watches blood oximeter is racist. Now, this is what I understand from reading this. In the Apple Watch, starting in the Series 6, there is the ability to measure the blood oxygen level. It's kind of like the thing they put on your finger in the hospital, the doctor's office. And as I understand it, it uses infrared light to measure your blood oxygen level, how much oxygen is in your blood. But according to the person filing the lawsuit, It does not take into account the person's skin tone. Now, the problem I'm having here is kind of twofold. One is physics. The physics of light understands that when it passes through different colored skin, it reacts differently. It's not like Apple was up there saying, well, let's design a pulse oximeter that doesn't work on black people. No. It's the physics of light through skin, of the laser that's used in the watch. There's a lot of things here. Now, could this be fixed via software? I don't know. Could it be fixed via, a different laser in the watch? I don't know. But the assumption that because light passes through dark skin different than light skin means that Apple's watch is racist is ridiculous. Apple's watch isn't racist. Apple's watch doesn't care what color your skin is. Apple's watch deals with what it has in front of it. But you see, now Apple's going to spend God knows how much money defending itself against what is basically a frivolous lawsuit because the word racist was added to it. It's kind of like the discussions I've been having with people online on one of my videos dealing with the Brunson case and the fact that simply because something is an emergency or is irregular, we have to throw out logic and reason because you have to do something. I don't know if this is something that Apple can fix in their watch. I don't know because it's dealing with a question of physics. But we've become so racially, we have literally become a racist nation. As a child, we were a racist nation. People were denied access to things because of the color of their skin. And I watched as that became less and less prevalent through more and more of my life. Now, where I lived in New York City, the kids weren't racist. We didn't care what color your skin was, just whether or not you played fair on the playground. But I watched us judging people less by the color of their skin, and now I'm watching us judge everything by the color of someone's skin. We have a president that chooses their vice president and their Supreme Court nominees not based on their qualifications first, but based on their color, their skin, their what sex they are, what gender they are. That has now become the primary motivating factor. We had a guy that was in charge of nuclear waste. I mean, the man had what I would only describe as obvious mental disorders. The man looked like a man, wore makeup, put on a dress, and stole luggage from airports. Because we were more worried about the diversity, the way things looked, than the work that was being done. And now we have a medical school, the Indiana University School of Medicine, that wants to require their professors to show they're committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm seeing a doctor, and especially if I'm seeing for some serious medical condition, I don't care what color their skin is. I don't care what gender they are. What I care about is their skill. Do you know what they call the person who comes in last at medical school? Doctor. We've become so hyper-concerned about the way things look, we are literally destroying our medical system. Think about that. You're talking about a medical school that wants professors to be more worried about the color of the student's skin than their aptitude in medicine. That is dangerous. I remember, again, as a young man, as a teenager, actually, I can't remember the name of the person. They were pushing to get women, the number of women in the New York fire department, They said, there aren't enough women in the New York Fire Department. And my father had a great line. He says, I don't care if it's a man or a woman. What I care about is if I'm in a fire, they can pick me up and drag my butt out of the building. This person literally said it would be better to drag them by the heels down the stairs, bouncing their head off the stairs, because there's less smoke down there. We lead to these terrible outcomes because we've become fixated on race and on sex, and we ignore reality. We ignore the laws of physics. We ignore the laws of biology because we want what we want, and we want to group people in the way we want to group them, and then we want to treat those groups the way we want to treat them. Oh, not the way we want to be treated, the way we want to treat them. Now, I've got some more examples to get to, but I have to take another break. Before I do, though, you know, the Constitution Study is just one of many voices on AmericaOutloud.com. So do me a favor, check it out. Every day, I get the pop-up little notifications. They're in my news feed, so I can see what's the latest news happening, what my fellow American Outlouders are seeing, and how they're viewing what I'm seeing. Now, it's more important, though, that you don't just show up and look. You want to share these stories, the videos, the articles, the podcasts, so that other people can get exposed to other points of view and other information. See, that's how we learn. That's how we grow. Not by isolating ourselves or by placing people in groups, but by exposing ourselves to other ideas and then exposing others to them as well. By doing so, you can help all of us as we secure the blessings of liberty.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan, a plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is X-L-E-A-R.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're doing a little bit of a deep dive, a root cause analysis of a sort as to why things are so messed up, especially in Washington and our other state houses. Now, I ended the last segment talking about University of Indiana focusing on they wanted the faculty to focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. But they're not the only one. So the University of Utah School of Medicine reportedly had a training session where they trained their faculty to acknowledge their own biases through diversity, equity, and inclusion training modules. Now, don't get me wrong. It is healthy to recognize we all have biases and to acknowledge them, to recognize them, to expose ourselves to counter points of view to help deal with them. But the problem I have with most of these training modules, at least the ones I've seen, is they're not about actually finding biases. They're assuming biases due to the color of her skin. Supposedly, I have biases because I'm Caucasian. Also, because I'm American. I grew up in a middle to upper middle income household. And I admit, I do have some biases. I'm also biased towards supporting the Constitution, taking it quite literally. I'm biased towards my biblical understandings and how I apply that to my life and to how I interact with others. But this idea that someone is biased because of the color of their skin, well, that's just another form of racism. And again, I bring this up because as I'm looking at what's going on, I'm seeing a lot of what we see out of Washington comes from this constant societal push to group people together and to judge them more based on the color of their skin or by their sexual preferences or by their political party than by anything they've actually done. And to me, that's the that's the part that I find most disconcerting. See, it's not a question of you've done something wrong, but you're part of the wrong group. And when in history has that not turned out badly? Now, since we're talking about schools and universities, we're seeing more and more students that are trying to revoke the honorary degrees of people they don't like. Generally, it's political opponents. Syracuse University wants to revoke the honorary degree of Rudy Giuliani. Why? So that's the interesting thing. They say they demand, the schools are demanding it, the students are demanding it, and now some of the faculty are demanding it as well. Now, I find that very interesting. See, when I was in school, the faculty was in charge. Now, apparently, it's the students that are in charge. Why? Could it be because he's a Republican? A Trump supporter? A Trump attorney? By the way, he's not alone. Former White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, Senator Ted Cruz, they both have had universities that want to that have been pressured to pull their honorary degrees. Now, again, I can see a situation where an honorary degree might be pulled. You know, for example, the guy that ran FTX, or maybe a Bernie Madoff. You know, if they had an honorary degree for their economics, we find out it's all fraudulent. Okay. But more and more, this seems to be a political move, an attempt to depersonalize the other. That having a contrary idea means you're not qualified to be recognized by a university. Further polarization, further isolation, and further denying the right of someone to be different. You know, Washington talked about the dissent, the rivalry, dissension natural to party politics, but it seems it's overtaken so much of our lives. Somebody tried to get one of my articles pulled because he disagreed with the fact that I defined the word enemy based on a dictionary, not a legal case. And for that, as the only reason, asked a site to pull an article. I find that very interesting. This idea that we cannot tolerate the other. The people who most complain about others' intolerance are often the ones that are most intolerant. Another discussion I had online with someone who could not wrap their head around the fact that places like 303 Creative or Masterpiece Cakes or Arlene's Flowers was more than happy, more than willing to serve a homosexual couple, but they were not willing to promote a homosexual marriage message. Couldn't wrap his head around it. Evidence didn't matter. And to him, it was intolerant to not promote that message. And for that, he was not willing to tolerate the rights of others. So where's this analysis bringing me? And again, I don't believe I've found the root of the problem. Well, I think I know the root of the problem, but not based on what I've talked about so far. It's personal belief. But as I look at this, what I see is this unwillingness to recognize differences. The two things I see are the group think, the willingness to place people in groups and assume that you must act a certain way based on the group that you're in, and this the lack of recognition of individuality, and the lack of willingness to allow disagreement. The need to, what you might call the woke culture, the cancel culture, these to me are still symptoms of something deeper. The desire in the human heart to be right. To be the one that's right. It's as old as history to say, it's not my fault, I'm right, the problem rests somewhere else. And again, I'm not pointing fingers at it. We all have these tendencies. When something goes wrong, my first instinct is to find somebody else's fault. It's not what I did. Well, I guess the root cause is we're human. And I think that that's part of it. I also think that in many ways, the last few generations have had it too easy. There's a thing, you know, if you take a tree and you isolate it so there's no wind, it doesn't grow strong. It doesn't bury its roots deep in the ground. And therefore, it's easy to fall over. It's epitomized in the saying, hard times make strong men. Strong men make easy times. Easy times make weak men. Weak men make hard times. I think we're entering the hard times because, well, we've been a nation of weak men. We haven't been willing to sacrifice for what we want. We've been told that we can have everything we want and pay for it later. Someone else will pick up the tab. So we ask our government to do things for us so that we won't have to pay for it. We'll get someone else to do it. We do it at the personal level. We do it at the societal level. We do it at the state level. I think that's also part of the analysis. So, in other words, I think if we boil down the causes, if we root through, keep looking for the source, I keep being reminded of Benjamin Franklin. So when he was asked after the Constitutional Convention what type of government they had given us, he replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." And that's what keeps coming to mind. See, a republic takes work, like many good things. It's not easy. A republic involves more than just hiring people to represent you. It's hiring people that will represent you properly. A constitutional republic means you're going to hire people that will represent us within the bounds of the powers we've delegated to them. In many ways, we are a republic of republics. And I guess in many ways that sort of reminds me of a marriage. Now, I'm not talking sister wives, but the idea of you have disparate entities with disparate agendas, preferences, needs. How do you balance those out? Now, my wife and I recently celebrated our 34th wedding anniversary. You don't survive 34 years as a couple without figuring out how to deal with the differences. Now, I'm not here to give anybody marriage advice, but if we apply that basic idea that I have to allow you to be different. I have to allow you to disagree. I have to be willing to work with you in the areas where we do agree. And that's something that seems to be lost. And I don't just mean in these progressive examples I've given. It seems to be lost in the patriot community as well. I can't tell you how many times I've had somebody, I've heard of different groups that, well, they say they can't work together because they don't agree 100% on everything. Well, you never agree 100% with anybody else. But if we can find out where we agree and work together on those, and then give each other the liberty to be different, not only to disagree, but to have their own ideas and say, okay, we don't agree here. How do we continue living together as whether it's husband and wife or whether it's states in a union when we disagree? And I think as far as I've been able to go in this past hour, I think the root cause is our loss of individuality. That may seem odd when we have so many different variations, but think about it a second. How often have we grouped people together based on different characteristics? Now, compare that to being an individual. And not just allowing yourself to be an individual, but allowing others to be individuals as well. See, the thing about liberty that I keep coming back to is if I'm going to live at liberty, if I'm going to live without unnecessary external influences, that only works is if I'm alone or if I allow others to live without my unnecessary external influences. Now, who defines what is necessary? Well, that used to be a collective decision. But we started changing things. We went from educating people to forcing people into compliance. And I think we got drunk on it. I think we like the idea of moralizing and telling people they have, you know, we're morally superior and you have to comply with us. Now, I'm not saying I've got the solution to all of our diseases. I'm not saying I've got the cure for America. What I am saying is, what I'm asking you to do is to consider. Do you allow others to be different? Do you live not only looking at your liberty, but allowing others' liberty as well? Are you an individual or just a member of a group? And the answer to that question will say a lot about what the future looks like. See, as individuals, as with individual rights, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, these all make a lot more sense, at least in my mind. But if we only have group rights, well, then the University of Indiana Medical School and the University of Utah Medical School make more sense. We've got to worry about diversity, inclusion, equity. We have to make decisions based on the color of people's skin or their political agenda or their sexual preferences. And which would be better for the country? Which would you prefer to live under? And before you answer that, consider this. There are a lot of people who think they are morally superior, that they're on the right side of history because they agree with a certain agenda. That's fine. But imagine what life would be like if you're not the one setting the agenda. If someone else is choosing the right side of history. If some group decides you are on the wrong side of history. Are you still as interested in this collectivist mentality? And I think that's the other part I want us all to consider is, put yourself in the other person's shoes or put yourself on the other side of whatever and ask, well, the Bible says, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Ask yourself, if you were on the other side, how would you want to be treated? Now, in all of this stuff we've been talking about, as I've been trying to find the roots and following my, down these trees and rabbit holes, there's one thing that I've reminded myself, and I want to remind you. See, if the root of our problem is how we deal with each other, then the solution doesn't come out of a law or a regulation or a program. It doesn't come out of a struggle session or just a societal canceling ideas they don't like. It comes out of us making an individual choice. No, I don't say an individual choice. You as an individual, me as an, we're not going to change the world. But you know what I can do? I can make the world around me a little bit better. Better for family, better for friends, better for neighbors. If I do that and you do that, well, even if we don't make the country a better place, if we don't make the world a better place, we've made our little part of the world a better place. Isn't that good enough, at least as a start? Sure, we'd all like to fix the world, but let's start with just fixing our families and fixing our neighborhoods. And hopefully, while you consider that, you'll remind people they can hear the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can find the podcast. The episodes usually go to podcast a day or two after they're heard on the radio. Just find your favorite podcast app and look for the Constitution Study. You can also find all the links at the homepage of AmericaOutloud.com. But don't keep them to yourself. Let's share them. Let's expose these ideas. Let's dig for the root of truth. And by doing so, and by sharing what we find, we can share the blessings of liberty.